Today, I am going to be interviewing Dawn from The Minimal Mom on YouTube. If you are on YouTube and you seek out decluttering videos, you've probably heard of her. She has so much knowledge on decluttering. She is really great at motivating, and she makes it really approachable. You don't have to be a super organized person to take her tips and love them and use them in your own home. So without further ado, let's jump into the interview with Dawn from The Minimal Mom.
My name is Lisa, mom of six and creator of the blog and YouTube channel Farmhouse on Boom. Join me as I share with you my love for creating a handmade home from scratch cooking and a little mom and entrepreneur life along the way.
Well, how are you, Dawn? How have you been?
Good. A little crazy with the
workbook and Christmas
and stuff, but
yeah. So you obviously, everybody knows you have a YouTube channel. I kind of just found out that you started a podcast over the summer.
We're kind of on a hiatus from it right now, but it'll be back.
Okay.
Next
cool.
month.
Cool. Yeah, so the Minimal Mom podcast. And then you are working on some kind of, what are you working on?
We just launched a book called Declutter Your Home in 15 Minutes a Day. So,
okay.
And we have a course that goes along with it. So it's been super yes. fun, but it's... It was a lot of work.
Yeah. As is anything like that. It always, once you have like the shiny package, the book, the course, it all looks like it was no big deal, I think, to people. I know better. It most certainly is. So tell us a bit about that, about your book. Because I think right now it's when everybody is thinking about it. I know I personally am with Christmas just ending.
Yeah, so I think, you know, for most people, what I hear is that they don't have time to declutter. They don't know where to start. They get overwhelmed by it. And decision fatigue is real anytime you go to declutter. And so that's where I wanted to really help break it down into 15-minute chunks, tackle a really specific area or item at a time so that we can just kind of focus on that, do that task, and then be done with it for the day and then come back the next day with renewed energy around it. So that was my hope, just to really break it down, give specific guidelines for how much to keep of each thing. And you don't have to want to be a minimalist to benefit from it. It's really meant for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think minimalist can mean a lot of different things. I know you're not the type of minimalist that has like a couch sitting in a white room,
yeah.
You know, you're a mom of four and homeschool. That's just not going to work.
Yeah, exactly.
So I know we can find you at The Minimal Mom on YouTube and your Minimal Mom podcast. Where can they find the program or in your book?
Yep. You can go to theminimalmom.com and you'll see our book and our course there.
All right. Thank you. So the thing you were just talking about, the decision fatigue, my husband and I were actually talking about this minutes before we started recording because I was like watching your YouTube videos and brushing up on some of my decluttering, you know, knowledge. And he struggles with a certain area because he has an emotional attachment to some items. Mm-hmm. And I know one of the things that you talk about is a sentimental bin, because mm-hmm. sometimes we keep things, like for example, with him, it's clothing. Sometimes you keep stuff you're not planning to wear, but you don't want to get rid of the shirt. And as right. I was listening to your YouTube channel or your YouTube video on this, I was like, Luke, you don't really need this. The dresser is the wrong place for this item.
Right. Yeah. So we highly recommend getting a memory box and really having one for each member of your family, because we all have sentimental stuff all throughout our house. It might be a photo, a certificate, a baby outfit, a baby blanket, a baby toy. It's different, a souvenir, you know, it could even be a coffee mug and it's cracked so you can't drink coffee from it, or it's too special, you don't want to drink coffee from it and risk breaking it. Or, you know, his clothing. And so what do we do with this? Because when we leave it in with our regular stuff, that's when it feels like a burden and we're not appreciating it or having fond memories. When we see it, it's like, ugh, that's still there. Whereas if we can use a memory box, it gives us a boundary or a guideline. So now we know how much we can keep. We can't keep all of our old clothing, but we can keep the most special pieces. So we talk about put in your favorites first, put in the most special things. But what happens, like what's really the magic behind it, is that you end up curating a really special collection of memories that you enjoy revisiting. when it's spread all over the house, even, I mean, with kids stuff, we used to have bins and bins of old, you know, baby clothes and stuff. I didn't revisit that. That was too stressful. I didn't want to. I didn't want the kids going through it and pulling everything out. But now they each have a memory box and they love it when we take it out and we pull stuff out and we share the stories and the memories. And it's really special. Like, that's how sentimental stuff should be, right? It should be enjoyable. You want to take a stroll down memory lane so you go back through it. Not this burden and, oh, my dresser is too full now because I have all this stuff in there that I don't actually wear.
Right, exactly. Now, whenever you do this, do you find that you just need one memory box per family member? Or do you have like, I don't know, I feel like some people might need a separate kitchen memory box. You know, there's certain, I'm not like that. I'm just not sentimental with anything. Mm-hmm. But I know some people are. And so do you find they have to break it down a little bit?
Yeah, it really depends on you. Some will break it down by like seasons of life. So you might have, you know, a memory box that was from when you had young kids. You might have one from your own childhood. And then maybe another season of life. For most of us though, you can get by with one. You'll be amazed once you have that container and that limit in the boundary, you look at the stuff you put in there differently. And so you weigh it like, okay, is it worth taking up room in this limited space? Or if I'm going to put this in, maybe I can pull something out that I used to think was special, but really isn't so special to me anymore.
Right. That's true. You would look at it with more of a curator eye, thinking what will make this enjoyable to actually dig back through someday.
Yeah.
I think the same type of principles probably apply to pictures because I know people like my mom, they have, because before we had digital books, you know, bins of pictures that we don't ever look through because it would be too overwhelming to get the box down, you know, to actually like look through it. And so I think the same kind of thing applies with making like a photo book. Or do you have any special thing you suggest for that?
Yeah, it's really similar, is deciding how do you want to store them so that you'll revisit. So for us, we still like photo albums. I haven't like scanned in all my photos, but I got a set of like nice all matching black photo albums and I took my box of random photos and started putting them in there. And it was the same thing. Then you start to weigh like, well, is it worth taking a spot in the photo album? So you get rid of the duplicates and like the weird pictures and you kind of just keep a few from each thing. Like, I don't need 50 pictures from Christmas 2018 to remember it, right? So I pull out like the most special ones and then let the rest go. So that, I mean, it's really hard to declutter anything if we're not weighing it against anything. If we just randomly hold something up and say, do I like this? Do I use it? Do I want to keep it for someday? That's really hard for our brain. We need something to weigh it against, some kind of container or limit to make that decision easier.
Right. That's true. Because you could always just, well, I do have space. Why not? Mm-hmm. But you have a concept I've heard you talk a lot about every single thing you have being something to manage. And I never felt that more than just this last week because I have 7 kids. We have lots of grandparents, which is such a blessing. My kids have both sets of grandparents on both sides. Plus they have 1, 2, 3 great grandparents. And so we have a lot of stuff. And as it was coming in last week, I was thinking of you. I was thinking, I have to now manage 500 Nerf bullets. I have to manage like 12 pieces to this one toy. And I need to go get it from this room and this room and this room. So that way it's a whole thing again. And yeah, so that concept is something I thought we could talk about a bit. Just this idea of something actually costing you something to keep it. Because sometimes we're like, well, it doesn't cost me anything to keep it.
Right.
Getting rid of it, I guess, cost me 50 cents or I don't know, whatever the thing's worth, $10. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think it's hard to wrap our brains around sometimes.
Yes. So I like to talk about that. Everything in our home is inventory that we have to manage. And what I like about this is that for a lot of us, whether you're a messy person who really struggles with staying on top of your home, or you're an organized person, but your systems have gotten overrun with too much clutter, we're both the same. We have the same problem. We have too much inventory. And so when we start to look at it, not as I'm a messy person, I'm so unorganized, why can everyone else keep on top of their house and I can't? It's really that we just have too much inventory. And so if we can look at it through that lens of, okay, if there are toys everywhere in my house over now after Christmas, we have too much toy inventory, right? So we need to pare it down. So are there old toys that need to go? Are there new toys? We've decluttered brand new toys after Christmas. It feels horrible, but they like their old
toys.
Some
don't even come out of the car. Tell the grandmas.
I'm like, oh, it has batteries and makes a lot of noise? No, right?
50 pieces. This isn't going to last 2 seconds in our house. So maybe somebody else can enjoy it who it will last for.
Right. But when we start to look at it through that lens, then I think it takes the pressure off us. Like, there's nothing wrong with me. It's just that I can't manage this much inventory, and that's totally okay.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, like with a Walmart or Target analogy, they have full-time people whose whole job is to like re-put things back. Like, somebody brings a towel over to the toy section. Like, I don't want this towel. They just throw it there. And then they have these people who go and they put all that stuff back. And so when you think about it as inventory, it's like, do we have employees for this? Yeah. No.
No. Yeah. And the other thing they do really well is that if there's inventory that's not getting used, it's not getting bought, it's not moving, they clearance it, right? They do what they got to do to get it out of the store. And so we can look at it the same way of like, okay, there's stuff in here I'm not using. How am I going to move it out so I don't have to continue to heat it and cool it and organize it and put it back when somebody moves it and keep it dry and keep it from getting wrecked by pests and not forget it's there, because then I feel guilty when I forget about it and I don't use it. And so, like you had said before, there is a cost to managing all this, and stores know that. They know if an item is not making money, it is gone, right? And we should look at it. We should be that cut and dry with it too. If it's not adding value to my life right now, then I need to invite it to leave my house, because we don't have time or energy for that.
No. And as simple as that sounds, it is something that you really have to get like a muscle for. Because when we first got married, I was talking to Luke the other day about this. I had a craft room full of stuff just in case. Like, I had fusible interfacing and I had bias tape and all of these things that if I was going to do a project like that, I probably wouldn't even shuffle through that craft room to find that piece of fusible interfacing. I probably would go up to Joann's and just get the things I need for the project.
Right.
So I'm like, what am I doing? I will spend an entire day, maybe once a month, organizing the craft room. And now I just, when I pretty much after a project, I do keep some things because now I have kids who like to play around with stuff, but it all fits in one little hutch because I don't have the space. I never have to organize it ever. Yep. And whenever I'm ready to do a new project, I just go get just what I need for that project. No clearance fabric, nothing.
Yeah. Yep. And it does take practice. But, and actually, Lisa, you had a really good question about your pantry. And I think it totally ties
into
the idea of inventory as well.
Yeah. I'm curious because you have a video on this. And I think you have some good insights, because I feel like with my pantry, I will want to stock up on things. And just the other day, I did a full-blown declutter of the whole kitchen. I got kind of ahead on the whole New Year's thing. And I did the pantry. And I was, like, reorganizing everything. So everybody just throws, like, the tomatoes with the peanut butter. And I found I had, like, 4 containers of peanut butter. And I didn't even know I had any of it. Yep. So, yeah, how do you manage all that?
Right. And so, again, it's inventory. So if we are forgetting about things we have, whether it's stuff in the pantry, stuff in our craft room, a lot of times, like, I'm sure you run into this, like, you forget about kids' clothing you have. You're like, oh, I wanted them to wear that before they grew out of it, right? I forgot to switch out the clothes in time. So anytime your own wardrobe, you have clothes in the back you forget about, it's too much inventory. So we have 2 choices then that we can do. And we understand, right? Why do we stock up on stuff? Because we want to save money, right? Like, that's a value you have. Like, it's admirable. Like, that's good. But it's also inventory that then we have to manage. So it's a trade-off. Like, okay, I'm stocking up because it's on sale so I can save money, but now I have to either not stock up and keep my inventory really low because I know myself and I'm too busy and I can only just keep what I use right now, or I need to put a system in place where I'm revisiting my inventory. So I know now, before I go grocery shopping, I have to actually move stuff. I have to see what's in the back. I have to look around. I have to go through the fridge. And I have to put that habit in place to manage this inventory. But we have to look at it like a trade-off then, right? Is it worth the money I'm saving? And in some seasons of life, it is, right? Like, things are tight right now. I need to be very careful with every penny. That's awesome. But just know you have to put the habit in place then too.
Right. So, and sometimes it's not, because I think about, like, with my business, I pay a lot of people to do certain things. And so maybe instead of that, I should just spend less time reorganizing my pantry. I don't know. Or maybe I enjoy reorganizing my pantry, and that is a value to me. And
exactly.
So yeah, you have to weigh all of those things. But sometimes it's more than just the money. And I think we forget to look at that. Sometimes, like, it's only the money. And then you open a drawer in your kitchen and you're like having to dig around all of this stuff to find the thing you need. And you're digging around stuff that you literally never, ever use.
Right.
And that's when you need to revisit that whole idea.
And what's cool is that, like, you get to decide, right? If you're like, I love organizing my pantry. I like feeling prepared. I like being stocked up. I like the money I save. Right. And so that's my thing, right? But then you can't also love having, like, tons of inventory for crafts and tons of homeschool inventory and a really big wardrobe and all this, right? Like, it's, if we can pick the thing that we really enjoy managing a lot of inventory in, it's like, that's my thing. And now the other areas, like, I don't care about clothes, right? Like, so I'm like, I would rather have a uniform, like, streamlined, keep my wardrobe simple, and then I'm going to put that energy elsewhere. But for others, it's different.
Right. Well, so yeah, for others, the clothing is like the one thing they want to go big on. I'm like you. I watched your uniform video. I did a uniform video too, because I just prefer that, because I find every single time if I go to swap out the clothes for the winter and the summer, there's always something, if I'm not doing the uniform thing, that is in perfect condition. I've been wearing these horrible shirts this whole time, and there was something perfect because it was in the back.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I'm not like that with clothing, but I'm trying to think of what thing I am like that with. I guess I like decor. So I keep probably way more art and decor than you do, you know, like the average person would do.
Mm-hmm.
But then other things, yeah, I don't care about keeping as much of.
Yeah. And what's great though is that when we start to reduce the inventory, and if we just recognize, like, okay, I am not in a season right now where I can coupon or stock up and save. Like, I had to just let that go. I've always been a very frugal person, but I was like, I can't, because then I was feeling so much guilt over wasting food. And I would look in the fridge and I'm like, all that money I saved on trying to be frugal just went out the window with the meat I just threw away or the grapes or whatever, right? And so we don't realize how much guilt we take on with all of this extra inventory that we're trying to manage, right? When you see the perfectly, like, brand new sweater in the back that you've never worn, but now it, like, got snagged and you never wore it and it's ruined, like, you feel so much guilt. And so if we can move this inventory out, it is amazing how much more peace you will feel in your own home. Like, we don't even realize how much this stuff is nagging at us and mocking us and being like, you wasted money. So it's
exactly.
So much more peace.
And once it's gone, you don't really think that, because I've had people say, well, what if I regret it? And you have a system for that. You have your quarantine bin, which we'll talk about in a minute, but I have basically never regretted. I think there's like maybe been one or two times where something came up a little bit later and I was like, oh, it's kind of expensive to replace. But I mean, like, basically never. So I would trade all of that decluttering for the whatever that thing costs. Cause I don't even remember what it is at this point. I can't even remember.
Yeah.
But there have been a few times. Yeah. And I'm a pretty reckless declutterer. So it's really, it should have happened more and it hasn't.
Yeah.
But tell us about your quarantine bin concept if people are nervous about this.
Yeah. So we've started calling it the time will tell bin because quarantine has really negative.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Oh, you came up with that before 2020, didn't you?
Yeah. It was totally acceptable back then. Now we call it time will tell. But it's good. Okay. But it's just, it can be a box or a Rubbermaid tote. And if you're just not sure, if you're like, I just don't know if I'm going to miss this kitchen stuff or these pieces of clothing. So there's three areas I recommend using it: kitchen, clothing, and kids' toys. If you're like, I need to test drive a simplified wardrobe, I need to test out, you know, having a simplified kitchen, then we use a time will tell bin. And you just put everything in there that you're not sure about. Again, we don't want to get hung up on a single item or feel overwhelmed with decision fatigue. So we put it in the bin and then we can time test it. Go back, leave it set aside for 3 to 6 months. If you need to pull anything out, pull it back out. But if not, in 3 to 6 months, you're going to feel very confident donating that stuff now because you've gone 6 months and realized you didn't miss it and your kitchen and your wardrobe feel so much better without it.
Yeah, I've done the time will tell thing by accident multiple times. So like whenever we were moving, we took Ben's over to his parent, Luke's parents' basement, and then had to, you know, 2 years later, they're like, hey, you're going to get your totes out of here. And I had a newborn Ben. I'd already had a newborn since then. Didn't miss it.
Yep.
So if I had the actual thing that needed that whole bin and didn't need it, it's like, can you just take those straight to the thrift shop? Because clearly I didn't need it.
Yep.
And then also we recently did, like 2 years ago, we did a kitchen renovation. And we moved a couple of totes downstairs of like things that we use, but we don't use enough to need it in a messy kitchen renovation.
Yep.
And I looked the other day downstairs, I was trying to organize some Christmas stuff, and I'm like, that's still down here. How did I not notice that?
Yeah.
So that was an accidental, time will tell, Ben, and time did tell
me. And actually, most of us have areas like that in our house, your attic, your garage, your basement. We all have like totes and bins in there that we have not looked in for years. And so if we can just be like, hey, look at this. I can skip a step ahead. I have already time tested this stuff. I haven't gone to pull it out in the last so many years. If there's anything super special, I can take a glance through, pull it out, and put it in my memory box because I have a spot for super special stuff now. But otherwise, the rest, I can just let that go. Like Cass from Clutterbug, she'll be like, you have 10 seconds to look through that bin, pull out anything that is like super special, and then the rest, box it up and donate it because you have not needed it. You have not missed it since it's been packed up.
Right. Well, so, okay, people wonder this. I'm sure you get this a lot. What's the problem with just having bins in the basement or in the attic or out in the barn, places where you might think they're really not bothering you, you're really not having to manage the inventory?
Yeah. It's still hanging over your head, right? You're still thinking
about
it.
Yeah.
Is it getting wet? Is it getting moldy? Like I had my grandma's milk glass in our basement, all wrapped up in newspaper in a bin. Like I'm like, it's good. And then our basement got wet and all the newspaper got moldy and it's fine. It's glass, right? Like I could wash it all, but I still had to wash it and repack it, get the moldy newspaper out of there. So I still had to handle it again. Now for that, I'm intentionally keeping that. It's okay. Like I was okay with that cost. But there was a lot of other stuff down there, like extra material that was just basically ruined. Then extra party supplies, Christmas decor that all got moldy. That was not worth my time and energy to have to maintain and now take care of once our basement got wet.
Right. We've had that happen multiple times. In our old house, we had our basement completely flood once and it was full of bins. And I'm like, what even is down here?
Mm-hmm.
Seriously. I just, if I don't really, the reason you take something to the basement is you really don't want it.
Yes.
Now, there are some things like decor.
Yeah.
Like I have Christmas decor and that, you know, I do want that next year.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, yeah, the basement is full of things that, why? Why is it
even
down
there? We all do it though, right? We weren't taught how to manage inventory. No one said, okay, Lisa, have 4 bins of Christmas, have 1 bin for each, you know, of your kids for extra clothes, have 1 bin for sentimental stuff. Like no one taught us this, right? So we're all trying to figure it out as we go now.
I also feel like whenever you do look at a critical eye with whatever you're getting out of your house, it does help you to think about what you are bringing into your house. So you might actually end up spending less because you have this, okay, only things that are useful. I don't want to spend extra time managing any extra things at all. You're at the store, something's on sale, and you're like, trigger, red flag, I'm not going to manage this item.
Totally. When you go through the process of decluttering your home, because it is very painful, like when you're decluttering, you're confronted with every wrong purchase you have made over the last however many years, right? It's humbling, it's sobering, it's exhausting, horrifying at times, but through that process, you do start to look at the things you bring in differently. And I know so many people now say, like, the question goes through my head, like, do I want to have to manage this? And we can think ahead to, like, the stuff on clearance or on sale and be like, nope, I'm not going to buy the stuff on clearance because I remember decluttering that, you know, recently, so I'm just not going to do it anymore.
Taking a quick break to tell you about an awesome podcast sponsor, Cozy Earth. I have been sleeping in my Cozy Earth bamboo pajamas every single night. I put them in the washer and dry them so that they're ready again because I cannot wait to go to bed in them. They are just so comfortable. Cozy Earth is offering Simple Farmhouse Life listeners 35% off your order with the code FARMHOUSE. Cozy Earth offers bedding products that will transform your sleep. Currently, I wake up 4 or 5 times every night to nurse the baby, and so it's important to me that I have a comfortable bed to get back into to fall asleep more quickly because my sleep can be so interrupted. Cozy Earth bedding is temperature regulating and it has superior softness. All products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. Incorporating Cozy Earth products into your self-care routine can enhance your sleep quality and overall wellness. Treat yourself to the ultimate in comfort and indulgence with Cozy Earth bedding and sleepwear and prioritize your self-care and sleep. You can head on over to CozyEarth.com and use the code FARMHOUSE for an exclusive 35% off. Go get your mom the luxury she deserves at CozyEarth.com with the promo code FARMHOUSE.
I take great care in my home to source products that are healthy, natural, organic, that will promote overall health. Alongside cooking from scratch, there are some foundational things like clean water and clean air that are as important as any of these other things. Americans take about 20,000 breaths per day and spend an average of 90% of their time indoors. My kids, they spend a ton of time outside, but I spend a lot of time inside cooking. I try to keep the window open, but still, the indoor air that we breathe can be up to 100 times more polluted than outdoor air, according to the EPA. Indoor air pollutants can cause respiratory symptoms like sneezing, congestion, scratchy throat, and even more serious health problems like lung and heart disease. So what is the solution for this? I want to tell you about this podcast sponsor, Air Doctor, the air purifier that filters out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants so your lungs don't have to. This includes allergens, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold spores, and even bacteria and viruses. We have an indoor cat, we have pollen, and who knows what else around our house. So this just gives me peace of mind knowing that running Air Doctor will get rid of 99.99% of dangerous contaminants. Air Doctor comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund minus shipping. Head to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code FARMHOUSE and you'll receive up to $300 off air purifiers. Exclusive to podcast customers, you will also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 value. Lock this special offer by going to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code FARMHOUSE.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you listen to Seth Godin at all? He has a lot of good stuff about education and other things that I really enjoy. I don't agree with everything he says, but one thing that he talks about is sunk cost and how our brains we feel like if we keep something further, or let's say that you went and got this certain degree and you spent $50,000 and then you realize you don't want to follow that career path and then you're spending the rest of your life because of that sunk cost. I think that really does apply with our items as well. You're going to go forward and not enjoy parts of your house because they're so full of things that you don't want, all because somehow this makes you feel like you didn't waste the money. It's like you're trying to convince yourself that, oh no, I still need and like this thing. It was totally worth that money.
Totally. We look at it and we say the only way to make this wrong purchase right is to use it, right? Is to wear the sweater, to wear the uncomfortable shoes. And we look at it and we think that's the only possible way, right? And I say, no, the worst thing you could do is to keep it and keep torturing yourself and feeling guilty about it. And the worst thing is to keep it in your house. The best thing you could do is look at it like a learning experience. I mean, here's what's so crazy. Almost everything we buy is trial and error. Like, I got an air fryer a few months ago because I heard everybody talking about air fryers. And I'm like, I bought the Instant Pot and I don't actually use the Instant Pot that much anymore, right? And so I'm like, do I get the air fryer or not? But like, some people I knew and really trusted, they're like, love my air fryer, use it every single day. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to buy an air fryer. I found an open box. I'm like, going to go like low commitment. I love the air fryer. We use it every single day, but I didn't know, right? I didn't know if we were going to love it and if our family right now this season, if it was actually going to live up. And so much stuff that we buy, cleaning products, clothes, shoes, kids' toys. How many kids' toys do we buy hoping this will be the thing that'll keep my kids entertained? And so we have to start looking at it like, you know what? We're going to make mistakes. Marketing is so strong. They are selling us all the benefits, telling us why it's going to be so great. We are going to make mistakes. And so what I need to do is just recognize, yep, it's a sunk cost. It was a mistake. The worst thing I could do though now is keep it in my house. I need to move it out, move on, and enjoy the peace that comes in my house when it's simplified.
And you will forget about it soon.
Totally.
I mean, it won't keep torturing you and taunting you like it does when you keep it. And there are some things, like let's say you've redecorated a room and you made the wrong decision on the couch. You got to probably live with that one at least for a while. Or maybe you got to get some drop cloth and try to make a slip cover or get some blankets that cover up part of it.
Yeah.
But a lot of things are not those things. A lot of things are not $1,000 or whatever you spent on your couch. They are just inexpensive items that you're letting rule your life. And you have to, one like thought that I like to think about is if this was sitting at the thrift shop for 10 bucks, let's say you went to the thrift shop and there was an Instant Pot, a nice one, just like the one you have, for $10. Knowing what you know now about the Instant Pot, would you buy it?
No, probably not.
Not knowing how you, yeah, whether you use it or you don't.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great way to look at it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because when it's not shiny and new and it's in its new box with the marketing on it, is it as appealing to you as it was?
Yeah.
You know, and with kids, like with the gift thing, sometimes it is the opening the shiny new box and then you open it up and it's just a bunch of little trinkets and, you know, a week later they're everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's still okay if you feel like, okay, this didn't serve the purpose. It did not entertain my kids for hours because the experience of opening the shiny new box on Christmas was fun and it was great. And then now it's done. It served the whole purpose of its existence for our family.
Yes. Exactly.
And they can go somewhere else.
But kids' stuff can be tricky, mostly because our own attachment to kids' stuff, our own thoughts about what kids need to have a happy childhood. But I think it is such a great opportunity to teach our kids how to manage inventory because they're going to have to deal with even more stuff than we have. And so how do we teach them how much is enjoyable for you to manage? How many toys can you keep up and keep picked up? Most of us, we have flooded our kids with way too much inventory. They can't stay on top of it. We can't stay on top of it. And nobody's winning. And certainly the kids aren't playing well and not occupying themselves.
Right. It's stressful for them. Whenever I do a big mom clean where I go through their room and I look at everything with a careful eye, I have to even help my older kids with this because they can't even see what they have that they see the value in everything, which is understandable. But after I do that, they suddenly realize that this place is actually fun again. I have stuff that I didn't even know I had. I can actually be creative in this space with the tools I have and not bogged down with a million things.
Yes. If you feel overwhelmed by their toys, they feel overwhelmed by it too. They just don't know how to say it. They won't tell you, oh, it's too many toys. They just won't play well. They'll be aggravated or annoyed. They won't play well with their siblings. They can't occupy themselves for very much time. So we have to look at the signals they're giving us because they're not going to tell us that. But if you look at their room and you feel stressed out, there's a good chance that they're feeling stressed out by it too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and they don't even notice it till it's done. They have no clue. But then when it's done, it's a relief to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So one of the biggest issues that people have with decluttering is it feels like a really big time commitment. I know you have a lot of encouragement on you can just maybe 5 minutes a day for the next several weeks and you'll get there. What can you say about that?
You know, I think often we glamorize these like, I'm going to take the whole weekend and I'm going to go through my kids' room and the attic and all this, and I'm going to get all this done. When in reality, it's kind of like if you said, I'm going to go run a marathon this weekend and I haven't been running ever, you know, or in months. Decision fatigue is real. All the emotions we feel with decluttering. And so what is better for most is to make a daily habit of decluttering. So where you spend 5, 10, or 15 minutes, you tackle a small section. You know, if you want to do your kids' room, we just tackle, okay, we're going to get everything off the floor. It's just the floor today. Tomorrow we'll look at clothes. The next day, you know, we'll look at art projects and trophies and stuff. And we make a daily habit because what happens is over that, we build up our confidence and we start to feel more confident in our decision making. And we joke about like building up our decluttering muscles, but when we make that daily habit, we get a much more done, and we get this habit in place. So we're not feeling like everything we're doing is being undone either. A lot of times we'll do this like, okay, I spent all Saturday cleaning the kids' rooms. And then a week or two later, it's, you know, looking trashed again, because decluttering is actually something we have to continually do. So if we can make it a daily habit or a weekly habit, we're going to be able to declutter more consistently, but also be able to maintain it as well.
Right. I agree that you have to do it daily. Even whenever you do this all the time, it's still just, I don't even know where the stuff comes from. Mm-hmm. But I make it a habit of, in my younger kids' room, never to come out with empty hands. Like, whether it's just bringing the laundry downstairs or trash because they cut up, you know, paper and boxes or whatever, but maybe even a couple items that I'm like, oh, you guys aren't really using this anymore. You're probably not going to notice this. And then they don't. But never leaving. It's just like every night I get a handful of stuff. And that's how we stay on top of it. I don't have time to set aside 30 minutes every single day to go up there and clean, but I can leave with full arms and get.
And the other thing it does is it like demystifies it. Like if we haven't been in our attic or our basement for months, we are assuming the worst about all of it. Uh-huh. And we've built it up to be this huge thing in our head that's so overwhelming. But if I say, and so if I'm like, okay, I have to set aside 4 hours to clean the attic. Well, when am I going to get to that, right? I'm going to keep pushing that off. But if I'm like, I'm going to set the timer for 5 minutes. I'm just going to go up to the attic. And I'm the only thing I'm going to do is refamiliarize myself with what's up there. If I see some obvious garbage or donations, I'm going to take that with me. But otherwise, I'm just going to look what's up there. Then the next time I go, I'm just going to start categorizing. I'm going to group like stuff with like stuff, move it all together so I can see all the Christmas stuff together and realize how much I actually have. And so if we approach it like that, it's not as daunting.
Yeah. And there is something to say about just starting something. It's with any project, anything you do.
Yep.
I find this happens all the time where I have something I really want to accomplish and I just won't start it. And then the second I just even get the ball rolling a little bit, like writing your book, something like that. I'm sure you thought about that for a long time. And then once you started on it, you're like, okay, I could see how if I just devote a little bit of time every day to this, it will eventually be done. Mm-hmm. But getting the ball rolling is almost always the hardest part.
Always, right? Always. So yeah. It is actually amazing, the power of 5 minutes, not for what you get done in that time, but for breaking down the mental blocks that are in place.
Yeah. And that's like everything with it. And then you gain your confidence and you're able to just continue doing it. Like, okay, I am the type of person who is able to tackle this and stay consistent with it.
Yep.
So, okay, one thing I wanted to ask you is your top 3 tips for the new year, because this is the time when people are thinking about this the most. I mean, we need to keep doing it all throughout the year, but this is when people are like, okay, I want a fresh start. My house feels full of Christmas, you know, gunk, whether it's gingerbread houses, I've got them, I've got stuff everywhere. It all needs to come down. So what are your top 3 tips for that in the new year?
So I would say step number one is to, when you're going to declutter a space, to think about how do I want it to function and to start looking at it, not like, okay, I need to declutter this or that, but to say, how do I want this to function? And so if you look at your kitchen, like you're very strategic, Lisa, right? About how your kitchen is set up, what you keep in there, the stuff you use every day is like within reach. And so you have set your kitchen up to function for the current season that you're in, the current style of cooking that you do, and to be very conducive with cooking a lot of meals at home all the time, right? And so if we would all take that same approach and say, okay, what season am I in? If I'm in a busy season where I'm just doing a lot of quick cooking, how can I set my kitchen up? So I might need to declutter my dishes more so we can't ever have big stacks next to the sink. Or, you know, all this extra baking stuff I never use, I'm going to move it to the basement for now so these other cabinets work better. So step one is to look at the function of the space and how can it serve me better. Two would be 5 minutes. Whatever you have been putting off to declutter or simplify, go to that space. Set the timer for 5 minutes and just start tidying, like throw away garbage, group like stuff with like stuff. And then the third thing would be to use a time will tell bin. So if there's an area that's hanging you up, bring a time will tell bin to that area. What you will find, you will go into there thinking you're going to put a lot of stuff in there, but as soon as you hold it up, and are like, well, should I really keep it for later? You're probably going to end up donating it. So just having that with you will break down the mental barrier, and it'll break through indecision, and you're going to end up donating way more than you're even going to put in the time will tell bin.
Probably so. And with the time will tell bin, I'm sure this goes without saying, but hide it from the children.
Yes.
Because they're going to see it and they think they need everything in it.
Yeah.
But if you remove it, they most likely won't even remember any of it was even there.
Totally.
So that's what I find with my kids.
Totally.
I did have one time where I did a time will tell and the child did notice.
Yeah.
And so I'm really glad I did the time will tell on that. Yep. But for the most part, they don't even have a clue because the inventory is so big.
Yeah.
They don't have little stock sheets with numbers by them. So they can't keep track of it.
If they ask for it by name for that one item, go get that. But don't bring the whole box and let them go through it again. Yeah.
Right. No. You'll be keeping the entire thing. You'll be just your whole – I know Clutterbug talks about the black trash bag.
Yeah.
Yes.
Huge.
Because when you go to the place to donate it, you pull it out and like, what's that?
Yep.
No.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Okay. So tell us again about – your book and your program and where we can find it and the best place that you want people to check you out.
So you can find our workbook, Declutter Your Home in 15 Minutes Today, on our website, theminimalmom.com. We have a course that goes along with it as well. So that is there too. But otherwise, we spend most of our time on YouTube. We have over 500 videos to help you declutter and simplify your home, whether you want to be a minimalist or not. You stop whenever you feel comfortable.
Yeah, and I love your videos because there are some videos on YouTube, which mine are kind of like this, where you have to watch them, you know, you can't really get them while you're on the go. Whereas yours, I can put a lot of times just on the computer and turn them up and I can do my chores and still get like I can get the gist of it without having to actually watch everything. And so I think I like channels like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, we're busy, right? You got to be able to multitask.
Get the tips, give me what I need, and then I can implement it.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and taking the time out of your busy day. I know that you're super busy, so
appreciate all that insight. Anytime we can do stuff together, I like it, so... Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast. Be sure to go over and check out Dawn over on Instagram and on YouTube and her programs. As always, thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode of the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast.